The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast. Episode 920 is the 10th of November 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dave Mutton, COO of Primary Bid, which won Best Alternative Finance Platform at the Shares Award last week. And Dave discusses how the platform works. I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about OTAC Resources, that's OTC. Plus, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Traxys, TRCS, Watkin Jones, that's WJG, and Distill, DIS. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Mutton, COO of Primary Bid. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Pleasure to talk to you again. And congratulations on the podcast doing so well lately.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thank you very much. You know, I just assume it's, you know, it's because with all the stuff, people, content we have on, it's offering, you know, offering value and it's free. So I'm glad people are listening to it. And yeah, we're breaking record figures. And I said recently, I used to work at a radio station, and next to me, there's a sort of couple of radio stations inside the building I was in. And the station next to us was a sister station, but it's had like a host, a co-presenter, and a marketing team. And I recently beat, our podcast has beat listeners in a week, what they usually have. And they're on an FM transmitter as well, so that's going some. So I'm very pleased the way it's going. But I've also to say, well done to you, because someone's a mutual backslapping exercise here. But you seem to be getting very popular, and I've seen you mentioned a lot more. And of course, you've helped raise funds for two of the most popular companies I've had on Vox Markets podcast quite a few times. So we'll go through that. Before we do, Dave, could you sort of give, for people not aware of Primary Bid, we're talking here, like people know what it's about. Can you give me a summary as to what Primary Bid is about, please?
Yes, of course I can. Well, Primary Bid, I think free is the important thing to mention there. It's free to join. You can register on the website, or even better, download our app. What we do is we engage with companies and brokers and help private individual investors get involved in these new share issues that companies do, especially AIM companies. So we allow you to take part in an offer. The offer gets publicized on the website. You can choose to get involved. There's a minimum investment of £1,000 if you do choose, but you can sign up for free. There's no obligation, and you just get notifications when an offer comes out, and then it's your choice. Do your own research and decide whether you want to get involved.
Yeah, and this is quite nice because, you know, when companies who are pre-revenue or just have a certain amount of revenue, or they would raise some money for capital expenditure, for example, and they're expanding business, I mean, normally, you know, private investors are shut out. The majority are shut out. Unless you've got a big chunk of money and you've got a sort of boutique account, then you don't get a C in here. But with Primary Bid, it's nice that people can go along, private investors, take part in these raises. So all they need to do essentially is register. Do they have credit checks or anything like that, Dave? What happens?
We do an appropriateness check to make sure that the investment is suitable for you, and we do a know your customer check, so you are who you say you are. Mm. You know, we're fully regulated by the FCA, so it's just, you know, a simple process. It takes about 2 minutes. We do it all automatically, and once you've been verified on the website or on the app, you can then take part in an offer.
Yeah, well, I talk about two of the companies that are very popular. They've been on the podcast several times: Ascent Resources and Vesarion, who you've recently done. In fact, last Friday, I think it was. And that case, I got an email. But I mean, I've got to say, I'm a shareholder of Vesarion already, and I thought I've got enough shares here, so I was happy for that. But so, would everyone get that email, or do they have to subscribe to that company on there, or how does that work?
Well, all the offers we're doing now are public, so the company is announcing it by an RNS. What we do is, as soon as the offer is announced by the company, we notify all the investors on our platform. So if you're an app registered user, you get a push notification to your phone. That's the fastest way of getting notified, and all other investors on the platform get an email. And this is why it's really important to tell investors, you know, to sign up, because the fastest way you'll hear about the offer is through us. And the latest offers we've done, and Vesarion is a great example, the The demand for these offers is now so strong that they're actually closing very, very quickly. Vesarion, the offer went live on our platform at 4:45 on Friday, and by 10 to 6, it had been oversubscribed more than double and closed. So if you're not registered with us, you don't get that alert, and you may miss out on the opportunity.
Yeah, I was talking to Neil after that, and he was saying that initially they're looking to raise $1.2 million, but in the end they upped it to $2.9 million. For now, I saw that because I literally went to your site just about 5 seconds after, about 10 minutes afterwards, and I was looking around. Then I went back to the main page there, and I saw this is closed. I thought, what? Is that right? I thought it was a technical glitch or something. But then it turns out there's so much in demand that it closed. And so how does that? So, for example, if I'd gone there and I'd put, say, I mean, is there a cap? I mean, if I put, like, say, I'd say 1,000 or 100,000, is there a cap on the amount I can invest, or what's the deal there?
Yeah, so it's set by the company. The company will put a cap in that they want to approve any investors over that amount. So for Vesarion and for Ascent Resources, the cap is set at 50,000. On our website, you need to pay with a debit card, and we can take a debit card payment up to £100,000 as long as your bank, you know, allows you to do that. And the rates do vary by different banks. Typically, most banks won't take a debit card payment more than 50,000, and some investors do get caught in fraud checks. It's obviously a very large transaction.
Yeah.
So we advise people, if you're going to do an investment with a large amount, speak to your bank beforehand before you do that order. So we take all the orders, we aggregate all the demand, anything over the cap set by the company, they have approval on. And that is not just for individual investors, it's also for institutional investors who may put an order in, and they potentially could be caught by that company cap.
Yeah.
And then once the shares are received, so typically the offer will close, we get the shares about 5 days later from the company registrar, and then we then settle those shares out to the individual investors' broking accounts. So we transfer via Crest, and that can take anything from same day with some brokers to 5 working days for other brokers who take a bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, that one with Vesarion, were you surprised by the demand that came in, how fast that was?
We were very surprised. I mean, typically our offers run over the weekend and we have them live until Sunday at 5 p.m. We actually raised some money for Vesarion earlier this year, you may remember, back
yep.
in, I think it was March. And that offer did run over the weekend, but we closed that on the Saturday evening. So that closed 24 hours early. But we'd no idea did we expect it to close in an hour and 10 minutes. It was quite remarkable seeing how busy the website got and how busy the app got within minutes of the offer going out, and seeing the amount invested just rising and rising. And we had to take the call to, you know, stop it at 10 to 6.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? It's a hugely hot area, and I'm a big fan of, you know, the graphene space. So I think Vesarion, you know, are quickly becoming a sort of almost a leader in that field. And you know, once you become a leader, it's hard for other companies to catch up. But yeah, they're quite impressive there. And same with Ascent, very popular company. So, you know, I mean, going forward, what impact do you think Primary Bid will have on equity fundraising for companies there?
I think it's a really interesting area. I mean, and we know the FCA is looking at, for example, fair access to IPOs, and I think it's only a matter of time before they'll turn their attention to any new share issue. And just by the demand, we can see quite clearly that there is demand for individual investors to get involved in this type of offer, you know, how fast they're closing now. So I think any company that's looking to raise funds, you know, they have to ask themselves the question, well, do I want access to that really sort of pent up untapped demand? And also, shouldn't I give access to that red pool of investors? Because then it's about fair access, not just the institutions getting the opportunity to, you know, to come into a company at a reduced price, but to give that fair access to the individual investor. So we hope, and obviously, we're building all the time and our traction is growing, that more and more companies will see the real value of tapping into this opportunity. And that happens now. Every time we do an offer, we get more inbound phone calls from other companies who've seen that and thought, oh, that's a great idea. We should do that too. And that's where our traction is coming from.
Yeah, and you say it's obviously open to private investors, but also institutions. And I know last time people were trying to get hands on shares, and a couple of people are always going to be cynical about new ways that things are done, aren't they? And so some people said, yes, but it'll be shut out. All the institutions will take it all. I mean, like you say, is there a cap on institutions as well?
Yes, absolutely. So our goal, you know, the reason we created Primary Bid and to do this is to enable the individual investor to get involved in this type of offer. So we have some protection in there. The company can set a limit above which they have approval on what they will take. So, for example, Ascent Resources, I think you had Colin on the podcast last week after his raise, and he confirmed, you know, that no institution got more than 50,000 in that raise. So the company has that control in there. We absolutely want as many individual investors as possible to take part in the offer. But, you know, you have to remember the company decides how much they want to raise, and they've got a limit of how many new shares they want to issue. So unfortunately, you know, like on Friday, we had to stop when we got to that limit.
Okay. And you know, when a fundraise happens, doesn't matter where it is, there's always a bit of a discount in the price. So who decides discount, Dave?
Well, the discount is completely in the control of the company. They will obviously discuss with their advisors, and it's a function of, you know, what are they raising the money for, you know, where is the company at the moment. So they will decide the timing of the offer, and they will decide the discount in conjunction with any of their advisors.
Yeah, and I suppose there has to be at a certain amount that it incentivizes people to take it up, take up the offer, but also not too much, because it'll just annoy, you know, existing shareholders. It's a fine line, isn't it, really?
It is a fine line. And of course, when you have a stock where the price can be a bit volatile, you know, you can have lots of discussions about when the offer is going to go out and what the price will probably be. And then just when you get to the point where you're about to put the offer out, the price changes and, you know, things, you know, can be adapted. But it's it is difficult when it's a volatile price.
Yeah. And do you know, after Vasarian was sent the, you know, RSF on Friday, and people said, oh, a bit sneaky, you know, a fundraise after hours. And I thought, no, hang on, this is Primary Bid. Private investors can get involved. It's not like, you know, behind closed doors, and it's not, you know, it's inaccessible. It's not. It's, you know, you can access it. And I said this on Twitter. I said, you know, register and you can get shares if you want. And so, just to point out, it's done when markets, or on the weekend when markets close, for that reason, isn't it? So explain that, if you could, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. We only do these offers now when the market is closed, because then there is no pressure on the price on for the company. So we do some in the week. So we did one recently for Frontera Resources, yep, which happened on a weeknight. And we did a few months back, Highland Natural Resources, that was on a weeknight. But a lot of them happen, you know, over a weekend. The market is closed, so you've got to watch out 4:30 as soon as the market closes. You know, if there's any offer coming from Primary Bid, it will be between 4:30 and I think it's 6:30, just as the latest a company can put an RNS out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's our window to get the offer announced, and then we're up and running, and we'll run it until we either hit the amount we're raising or we close it. In an evening, we'll close at 9 p.m. in a weeknight, and over the weekend, we typically close a Sunday at 5.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. And so what's next, Dave?
Well, it's really exciting for us. You know, we're getting more and more people joining all the time. We're looking at the bigger picture, the broader opportunity. We're just going through a whole redesign of the service right now. So we've got a new website design coming, a new app design coming. You know, in the UK, there's about 2.6 million people who've got a stocks and shares ISA. You know, so these are people who've chosen stocks as a potential investment. And we definitely see our opportunity potentially is that large. And then looking at, you know, if you take AIM as an example, every year, the 500 plus new share issues from AIM companies raising, you know, 3-4 billion every year. So there's huge opportunity for us to do more and more offers with more companies and reaching larger and larger pool of investors. It's looking very, very positive.
Excellent stuff. And obviously, if you need to register, you can. It's free of charge. And then you hand over money when you've bought shares, I assume. So, Dave, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me right now on the podcast is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, very good, very good. Thank you.
I should say award-winning John. So no, John award-winning Mayer, I should say. Just gives a bit of gravitas, you know?
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
And of course, when I say award-winning, it's in the field of mining, you know, analysis. It's not sprinting or the 500 meters or something like that. John, it's in this area, isn't it?
It's a long old haul these days. So, but you know, what's most important is what we're recommending and how well these stocks are performing. And I've got to say, the last 9 months has been very good for the sector, been very good for the companies that we're working with and the stocks that we are recommending to our clients.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so which stock are you looking at the moment, John? What's had an update recently? What do you like?
Well, you know, in the spirit of wanting to find companies that we think have multiple upside, Ortak Resources looks like it's one of the you know one it looks like it's poised to go much better. It's just announced that it's consolidating its holding in Casa Mining.
Mm-hmm.
They already own a stake of it. I think it's around 30%, or sorry, 20%, and they're taking that up. So they're going to end up buying the whole of the business. They've agreed to buy up to 70, and then they are offering to buy out the remaining minority shareholders. So that's good. And what they're looking to do at Casa is to develop that into a 2 million ounce, 2 gram a ton gold project. It's in the DRC, which is a tricky place at the best of times. But 2 million ounces is not to be sniffed at. They bought it very, very cheaply, which is what we like to see. We don't like to see expensive acquisitions. We like to see these things representing good value for shareholders. They're using a bit of stock for that, and they've got some cash. And the combination and the chief executive of Ortak is moving over to run the operations at Casa, which is a good sign. He's happy to go and do that. They're drilling off a high-grade portion of it, which they announced the other day. Some very exciting higher-grade results. It's got free gold in it. It's a bit nuggety, but that's okay. And we're impressed by what's going on there. Now, that's not the only thing in Ortak. Whilst all the exciting stuff is with the Casa acquisition, they are also holders of a large stake in something called Zamsort. Mm-hmm. And at some point in time, I think there'll be a similar style consolidation of that asset as well. And the exciting thing about Zamsort is it has a mining license to mine copper in Zambia. It's got a very small copper mining operation going on there. Consolidating that asset will allow Ortak to go in and actually do more on that asset, and I think that would be good for everyone involved in that particular venture. So, and that would be good for Ortak shareholders. So I think there's a lot to come from Ortak. Bit of a management reshuffle recently. That was taken positively by the market, and I think that will allow Nick von Schoending, who is ex-Anglo and ex-Valar, he sorted out a lot of the problems at Valar, and I think he's a good turnaround man and a good man to lead this forwards.
Yeah, well, I had Nick on the podcast yesterday, and he's been on twice now since they've decided to have this reshuffle, and it makes a lot of sense. It simplifies the structure, and especially not only from an operational point of view, but from an investor point of view, it's always tricky. I mean, when you want to get an investing story across to someone, for three or four different sort of parts of the business, it's always hard, you know? I'm thinking, if they want to get some interest in the stock, they need to simplify that, and that's what they're doing, which is a good thing, isn't it, you know?
Yes, absolutely. This is a restructuring of a group of assets. They got held back by the Sturek mining project in Slovakia, which just isn't moving ahead. And the key now is to drive the Casa project forwards, and also see if they can resolve the impasse at Zamsort. And you know, if they get, even if one of those works, that Ortak should be multiple times of its share price. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to be done here. And Nick von Schoending, he's a good man, and he's looking to make his mark on this one.
Yeah, I didn't realise he's ex of Anglo and Valar, is he? Is that right?
Valar. Yes. So he's, look, he's got great expertise under his belt. He really knows how to run a company. And this is the first time he's been in something as small as this,
mm-hmm.
Which is great from an Ortak perspective. And he's fully incentivized from a personal perspective to make this work. And I'm not talking about numbers of shares. I'm just talking about the fact that he wants to make his reputation by developing this company into something substantially larger than it is now.
Excellent stuff. So it's OTC, Ortak Resources. And thanks for the information there, John. And we'll speak next week, fella.
Yep, I look forward to it. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mole, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks, yes.
Good.
And you were just saying you had a nice weekend last weekend. The horses did quite well as well. It's always nice to have a couple of winners. It pays for the day,
A couple of winners. Made a few quid, paid for the day, came back with more than I took. Not massive amounts, but enough to help. So no, it was all very pleasing, I'm delighted to say. But not, of course, that we're conflating gambling with investing, I should say, because obviously, as we know, they're very different. So.
Yeah. Well, we're just saying, a friend of mine, I go once a year to Cheltenham with friends, and one of my friends is really into it, loves the gambling. He's always loved, you know, fruit machines and all that stuff. And I'm not particularly into horse, you know, betting. And he says, well, what, you're into stocks and shares? I said, well, I said, it's not the same thing. And he couldn't understand
not
that.
At all.
I said, it's not, like I said, it's, you don't lose all your money on, unless you do it really badly wrong. And you can sway the odds in your favour with investing with a bit of research. And
correct. Exactly. You know, I mean, I'd like to think you can sway the odds in your favour with a bit of research on the horses, which you can, but you're still obviously exposed to random elements like jockey error, going change. You know, there's all sorts of things that are just totally beyond your control. Now, I know that with investing, there are things that are beyond your control, like, you know, natural disasters or geopolitical events, but you can factor those into the price that you pay. And there are actually opportunities potentially to go back in if you think they've got nothing to do with the underlying company. It won't affect how many packets or widgets or whatever it sells. And actually, you can go back in again, which really, with a horse, you know, you can't. By the time the jockey's fallen off, it's all over anyway. So
yeah.
And it's very different.
Yes, and you're right. It's not a case of, let's say I'm going to invest in the telecommunications sector and I'm looking at, say, maybe BT, maybe Sky, maybe TalkTalk or some other Vodafone, whatever. It's not all of a sudden, on your mark, set, go. They're all rich together. You know, it's not the same kind of thing.
Exactly.
They're bumping each other around. And,
and investing, if you don't want to play for a day, a week, a month, you don't have to. Whereas the horses, you're there, there's six races, seven, and you kind of think, well, I'm here, so I'm going to have a bash. Whereas as we know with investing, you wait for the stock and the price to come to you. You don't go looking for the price and the stock. You know, and that's how you avoid, hopefully, the big disasters. And you can pick the winners patiently and choose when you want to play, not when you have to, because the gate's opened or the flag's gone up.
Yeah. I mean, I do know a couple of situations on smaller caps. I do look at smaller caps a lot, and where there are some almost binary outcomes of you know, a company like a small mining company going for funding. If they don't get it, that's it. I mean, if they do get it's the reward is through the ceiling. But if they don't get it, it's through the floor. So
then that probably is closer to speculating than
exactly.
investing.
Exactly, that's
a
50-50 chance. Then that's not sort of exactly. Okay. Anyway, let's look at the some individual stocks. What are you going with this week?
So three against the field. We've looked at them all before. Traxys, Watkins Jones and Distill.
Yeah, Traxys. I've seen a lot of people mention this before, and how is it doing at the moment?
Traxys is doing very well. Well, it's one of those, when we first looked at it, April time, I think, and the shares just sort of gently dribbled away and really didn't do very much at all. So you think, oh, Lord, have I got this one wrong? But we first looked at it at about £4.30. It's now £5.50, and it's had a good little run in the last couple of weeks on the back of some full-year figures. So just to remind people what it does, it's a traffic and transport analytics and software company. So it provides traffic planning and flow planning for things like sporting events or big events like, say, Glastonbury or Silverstone. Just think of how difficult it is getting people in and out of these places. Mm-hmm. So they're helped with that. And also its original core business was rail network planning and track monitoring and signal monitoring and all of that sort of thing. Now, when we first looked at it, the first half numbers back in January had frankly been a little bit light. And you'd have that dreaded situation of the second half weighting of numbers, which, as we know, once a company starts saying that, generally speaking, things are starting to get certainly a little bit riskier. But on this occasion, it actually worked out very nicely, thank you very much indeed. And the full year figures actually worked out very nicely. So full year revenues were up 6, pre-tax profit was up 14, and the dividend was up 17 because the company added to its net cash pile of which took it to around 15 million quid. The real strength in the business came on the rail side, which, pardon the expression, that has been subject to delays in the past, as any commuter will know. You know, Network Rail, it's a big organisation, it's got an awful lot on its plate. There has been a big, in fact, I think the biggest ever contract the company's had for its rail side. It was a little bit flatter on the traffic planning side, but it still made a decent profit. But you've got biggest contract ever, you've got a couple of acquisitions bedding in, and overall, it was a very solid set of numbers. Outlook statement read pretty upbeat. So overall, it's doing what we would have hoped it would do. I think it is going to be one of those stocks. Any business that deals with government or a government agency or a government-backed body like Network Rail, there's always the danger that there's going to be a delay or God forbid, a cancellation because of either, you know, penury, other government priorities getting involved, or the government just not being very organised. Now, that's not to pick on government. Companies can, you know, go provide you with all of those problems as well. But I think government, when people think, oh, look, this is going to happen because the government's involved and they want it to happen, just be careful, because there have been lots of companies that have been, you know, very, very much looking forward to regulatory-driven things. And once their regulation is in place, great, but they can take longer to bear fruit than some. And Traxys will, I think, see lumps and bumps in its business. And if anything, given it's a well-run company, you buy it on the lumps, as it were, when things have gone wrong, as we look to do back in the spring, rather than necessarily the bumps. So would I be chasing it after it's just had a fantastic run? Possibly not, but it is on track. Things are going well. It is on now roughly 20 times earnings, so it's one much more for momentum jockeys than it is value hunters. Mm-hmm. There is a little yield, but it's 0.3%. So it's one of those that you probably just wait for it to cool off. But it does seem to be a company in a good place strategically, strong products, net cash balance sheet. So if you've got it, keep it. If you haven't, maybe just wait. But it does seem to be, at the moment at least, all going according to plan.
Yeah, do you know what? I always think the value of looking at fundamentals and looking at technicals, just look at a chart, even if you're not an expert on a chart, let's look at a chart here. And it's been mm-hmm. at this price three times before. Well, this is the third time, and it's failed at this level. And you're thinking, well, what's the chance of it getting past? I mean, are its fundamentals that much stronger than they were previously? But it's, like I said, it's heading towards, well, it's strong resistance here. And if it breaks above this, of course, then that's good. That's
that would be a good sign. Absolutely.
If it doesn't, I'd wait a little bit and see what happens.
Ditto. Agreed. Yeah, exactly. Definitely.
Next one is Watkins Jones. Right,
which was actually the first stock that we ever looked at together back in February.
Wow.
It's since gone from around 150p to 230, so it's up 50-odd%. It's been a tremendous performer. Over that time, the FTSE All Shares up around 4%, which gives you a feel for how well it's done. Trading statement came out very end of October, in line with expectations. Job done. Thank you very much indeed. All 10 developed. Don't forget, this is a provider of student accommodation, builder of student accommodation. It's also looking to do some more work in the nursing side. It's got 10. It had 10 developments planned for this year. They've all been forward sold, so there's fantastic visibility for this year. For next year, 5 developments have already been forward sold, so visibility is good. If anything, the question I would therefore raise is, how easy is it going to be for this company in the short term to surprise on the upside when this year's in the bag and a lot of next year's in the bag already? The answer, probably quite hard, truth be told. So you've now got a stock where it's well run, it's well financed, good long-term competitive position. We all know the situation is student housing still a hot area, even if Theresa May and Amber Rudd are involved in this dispute as to whether foreign students should be involved in including immigration numbers or not. But you've now got what's effectively a builder of accommodation, trading at a big premium to the classic house builders with a discount yield relative to the classic builders. It's on a big premium to the broader UK market with a discount yield as well. So I just think, you know, it's such a brilliant run. My inclination might be just to take a few profits, given that, again, you've almost got the next 18 months of news in the bag already. Just wait to see what happens. I could be wrong. It could just fly away if you get a house builder's budget coming up in a couple of weeks' time. But my inclination would be just, you know, thanks ever so much. We're up 50% in 9 months when the market's up 4. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody went broke taking a profit, did they?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's almost like a share of two stories here. Because, I mean, up until 2017, it was flat. And then all of a sudden, just started gradually going up. So you can draw a line, basically. If you draw a line under the lows from 2017 to today, you know, this entire year, and you put it under the lows, it goes from bottom left to top right. And it touches that line every now and again on the lows and then bounces off it and carries on going back up. And it's heading towards that line again now at 220. If it goes below that, it may soften a bit more, but there we go. All right, that's Watkins Jones. What's last, Russ?
And the last one's Distill, which is, remember, is a spirits maker. It's some of its brands. You see them in quite a lot of boozers now. Red Leg Spiced Rum, Blavod, Black Vodka, Blackwood's Gin and Vodka. Mm-hmm. We looked at it in March, and it went from 2p to 3.1p, and then actually said, thanks ever so much.
Yeah.
55% in a couple of months. No matter how good the company is, again, you know, thank you. It did then, to be fair, go to 3.6, so I thought, dropped one. But it's now come all the way back to 2.3p.
Yeah,
and we've just had some numbers late October. Revenue's up 23%, gross profits up 22%, volumes up 41% though, and I'll come back to that in a second. And the operating loss shrank from £66,000 to 21 grand. So it's basically break even. It's got cash in the bank of 690 grand, which gives it a little bit of wiggle room. But, you know, the shares did come back after the numbers. And I think partly because the company's still working very hard to promote its products. Mm-hmm. You know, marketing spend was up 36%. And we know that if you can establish strong brands, it gives you pricing power, but it can take time to do. And I think the fact that volumes were up 41 and revenues were up 23 tells you that they're probably having to be quite, you know, maybe a little bit more promotional on the pricing that you'd like than you'd like to think when, you know, that they're talking about establishing these as premium priced brands. And I think that's probably what's weighed on the stock. I'm not saying it's a bad thing for the long run, but, you know, when Diageo have just spent $1 billion on George Clooney's tequila business, which has got sales of about 30 million, I mean, it shows just, you know, how excited people can get about brands. I mean, Don Goulding's running the company. He's an ex-Diageo man, so he knows exactly what he's got to do, which is establish these brands, and that gives you pricing power. But I think, obviously, people just got a little bit nervous. Volume strong, revenues didn't quite keep track, continuing to work hard on the promotion. So I think that's why the shares have been weak. I think it's probably a watching brief on this one. I mean, we got involved at 2p. You know, we had a look at it at 2p last time, and it ran strongly. I think you're just now looking for a little bit more proof on the pricing power side. And you look at Burberry yesterday. Yeah. They're talking about, you know, driving the brand even more up market because that probably gives them even more pricing. But if you're selling to genuine plutocrats, then they're probably not bothered whether the trench coat's 1,500 quid or 2 grand, quite frankly. So, you know, in that respect. But so I see what he's trying to do. But it's just one of those things where the stock just travels so far, so fast. I think things probably got a bit overheated. Now it's back down at this level. It's getting more interesting again. Maybe let's have another look at it at the next trading statement, because you would be a little bit worried if there is further signs that, you know, volumes continue to outstrip revenue growth by quite such a degree.
Yeah, well, it's, do you know what? Right now is an interesting price, because 2.3 is where it dipped to in the summer, and they bounced back off that. Back up to 3 points, sort of 8, and then so it's at that level again. So it'll be interesting to see if it can hold that support, or whether it goes lower or higher there. Marvellous, Russ. Brilliant. A nice weekend.
Have a lovely weekend,
speak
too.
Next
look
week.
Forward to talking to you next week. Take care, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At 5, Belzone Mining. Belzone. Though you were in the Belzone. That's right. That's BZM. Welcome to the Belzone. At 4, Cogent Power. CGP ticker. Sorry, I can't get Belzone out of my head. At 3, Premier African Minerals. Prem is ticker there. At 2, Feedback, FDPK. And at number 1, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And it's the start of a turnaround story here, I think. It's Mayen Energy, MYN. Okay, and top 5 most liked analysis on the Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours are as follows. At 5, Pembridge Resources. That's PERE, Holdings and Company. At 4, Independent Oil and Gas, IOG, Harvey License, Valuation Update. At 3, Mayen Energy, Holdings and Company. Well, to do with the MXO, that is. At 2, Ortac Resources, Confirmation of Proposed Acquisition. And number 1, most liked RNS, is from Greatland Gold, GGP, a TR1 notification of major holdings. I think it was a sell, though. I think it's the right one I'm looking at, but check that out yourself. So GGP there, and a highly followed stock at the moment, very hot. Quite a high valuation. I think it's exploration, but some people are saying that what they've got on the ground there could be big. So there we are. So check it out. It's GGP, most liked RNS. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.